If you were to lose all the books in the Bible, the Hebrew Bible and the New Testament, but had this passage that Judy read from Exodus, you wouldn't lose anything. Because the entire Bible grows out of this theophany, this appearance of God. Everything. It is absolutely central, certainly to the Hebrew Bible. All you have to do is read the prophets, or better yet, read the Psalms, that is the prayers of the Jews, because the prayer, of course, are expressions, the quintessential expression of the religious act. And certainly the New Testament is the same thing. We remember the Transfiguration story last week from Luke, where Moses and Elijah were there talking about Jesus' exodus. The exodus incorporates everything that comes out of not just the Hebrew Bible, but the New Testament as well. Why? What's at stake here? The most fundamental understanding of who this God of the Jews is. It helps to compare this God with all the gods of the Jews' neighbors and antecedents, who are basically fertility divinities. They're all male and female, of course. And people were important only insofar as they could imitate the fertility gods, which means to have sexual intercourse and make babies. And that was fine. That was exactly what was called for in that worldview. But you notice it's also an impersonal worldview. We are more than our genitals, but not in this view of all these other ancient religions. So what is unique about this God? This is several things. This mysterious name, I am who I am. Martin Buber has a much, I think, more helpful translation. He says, I will be who I will be. Meaning that this is an absolutely non-magical God, because if you knew the name of the God or the name of anything, then you could control him. That's, again, the ancient worldview. You can't know the name of this God. Therefore, this God is beyond magical control. This God is the first God to enter into conversation with human beings, to look at another, a human being, and say, we're going to have a dialogue. The fertility divinities obviously didn't do that, couldn't do that. It wouldn't make any sense. But the most crucial part is that this is the God of the losers. This is the God of the losers, not the God of the big battalions, not the God of a tribe that beats everybody else up, but a God who is responsive to the misery of us human beings, to our oppression of each other. That's the absolutely central message of the entire Bible. That's exactly the God in whom Jesus believed, in whose place he acted, the way he acted as he did. Responsive, above all, to the people that everybody else ignores, to the non-persons. See, after 2,000 years, we still haven't got our heads around that, I don't think. We got a God of glory, God of big ceremonies, God of big titles, God of the Vatican Basilica, God of all this great art, God of all, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, fill in the blanks. But so far as I can see, we still do not primarily understand God as the God of the oppressed. Yet that alone is who God is. That also distinguishes this God from every other set of religious beliefs I know, even my beloved Buddhism. It seems to me is transcended by this God. And another thing that it makes it important, it takes into account human misery, human oppression, the violence we work on each other, which, as we all know, is multiform. by our indifference, by our self-righteousness, by our fear, by our greed. This God stands athwart all of those impulses or more than impulses in us and in our world. This is the God that Jesus proclaimed. This is the God that all the prophets proclaimed. This is the God that we as a Church of Christ ought to be proclaiming, and it seems to me rarely do, except in some, we have our token saints. We've got Mother Teresa, we've got Benedict Joseph Lowry, we've got Dorothy Day, we've got Oscar Romero. But I still don't think that we can point to these few human beings as being on our side, that we still have not absorbed the notion that this is who God is. The God who resists all oppression, the God who wants to rectify all injustice on the earth. The word justice, by the way, occurs far more in the Bible than does the word love. So it is an essentially political God, if you will. Essentially a political God, but not political in the sense of the way we work now. You know, everybody's wondering who's going to be the next pope because there's a world leader, world leader. Well, let us hope whoever he, unfortunately just he, is, will somehow express in his life the reality of this God that the book of Exodus talks about.